Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for the week of February 13th, 2012. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and as always, I'm joined today by the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how's it going?
Oh, it's going all right. How you doing?
Doing pretty nice, and for the first time, we are officially announcing our friend Paul Agnello as the co-host, along with the two of us, for the this upcoming season. Paul, welcome back.
Hey, great to be back.
So, we haven't done a show this yet for thus far for 2012. We're not going to go too far back in time here. Don't want to waste everybody's time going over what has already been discussed to death, but we've got some stuff to go over here. So do we want to start with what happened quite a while ago, or do you want to kind of start with the recent stuff and then work our way back?
Well, the stuff that happened a long time ago also includes Juan Pierre, and Juan Pierre is 30. He's only 34 years old. I just I'm on Baseball Nation while we're opening this up, which is SB Nation's MLB hub. And Al Yellen wrote an article about Juan Pierre setting a major league record in, like, caught stealing or something like that. And he is only 34.
Hmm.
I think the guy's been in the league for 30 years now, and he's only 34.
And he still looks like he's like 22, though. That's the best part.
Oh yeah, that's the creepiest part of it. Juan Pierre, former Rockies hot prospect, speedy center fielder, and like he's still hanging around as the obnoxious speedy guy. And he's only 30. He came up at age 22, played 51 games for the Rockies.
I keep having all these same feelings whenever I think about Andrew Jones, because he's only like 34.
Wow, he does not have Andrew Jones is exactly, he's right there in that same category. Guys you knew from like the late 90s, early 2000s, who were inexplicably young and are inexplicably still playing, even though they aren't that great, and yeah.
He turns 35 in like a couple months.
He's 35 in August. August 14th, he shares a birthday with my mother.
We'll be having the same conversation about Clayton Kershaw in, like, 2030.
Oh, yeah. Can you believe that he's only 30-something?
Jay Bruce, Justin Upton. It's insane.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. He's been caught stealing 190 times in his career, and it looks like he's led the league in being caught stealing in the season 7 times. That's embarrassing. I mean, he's still 60.
He probably played, though. Well, he played when they, the stolen base probably had its biggest decline, right? So,
in 2000?
I was at the height of, like, hitting home runs and everything.
I would argue the late 90s were the highest at hitting home runs there. Pierre was what? That's why everyone loves Juan Pierre, because he wasn't a big juiced-out roider hitting home runs, because everybody loves stolen bases more than home runs.
It's true.
Yeah. Let's see. 1 minus 190 over 554 to see what his stolen base percentages for his career, and it is like a 66%. That's awful. That's terrible. You need at least like a 75 to 80% to be like break even good at stealing bases.
Poor Juan Pierre.
How many times of all the times that he's made it to first base do you think he's attempted to steal?
Oh gosh, probably
100%.
Most of them, yeah.
99.6.
Something like that, yeah.
You know what's hilarious? He has had exactly, let's see, well, those are also Colorado years. He's never posted an on-base percentage above 400, which is okay. It's a pretty elite number there to reach. He broke 370 twice, 363 times, and 330, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Out of his 12 seasons. Every other time he's been a sub, like, 330 guy. Oh, no, wait, 365 in 2009. He's had a decently good career. A lot of stolen bases, never strikes out, okay batting average, things like that. He doesn't get on base as well as he should for that skill set.
You should use this as a springboard for reviving that Rockies retro series.
Yeah, seriously. Remember Juan Pierre? We could still write about him. But no, we did not acquire Juan Pierre, however, this offseason. We acquired other guys who are not Juan Pierre, like Michael Goddard, for example, who might be as un-Juan Pierre as humanly possible.
It's true. He doesn't have the range, but he has a strong arm.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have the range, doesn't have a strong arm. He's not fast. He's big. He hits home runs, and
he's not going to lead in caught steals or steals.
Yeah, that's true as well. Wow, yeah. Michael Goodyear is the Rockies' new right fielder. If you all weren't painfully aware yet, we were thinking about making a rundown of all these past moves that we've made over the last forever, but we'll spare you all because if you've been reading the site regularly, you're sick to death of hearing about all the moves and the changes and the maturity. But opening day lineup looks to be Dexter Fowler in center field, Marco Scudero at second base, Cargo in the three playing in left field, Tulowitzki at the four, shortstop, obviously. Fifth will be Kadire in right field. Sixth, probably Todd Helton at first base. Seventh, Ramon Hernandez at catcher. Eighth, Casey Blake at third base. And then ninth will be Jeremy Guthrie, who's going to, in my opinion, he's pretty much a lock for opening day starter. He's maybe not be better than Chacin as far as talent goes, but remember how young Chacin is, and they'd rather have a veteran take the opening day bullet rather than a young guy who might let the pressure get to his head.
I think the Coors Field announcer needs to take some tips from the way you just announced that. That was pretty awesome. Troy Tulowitzki, shortstop, obviously.
Well, where else would he play? We're not very well going to put him in center field and expect him to do well.
Certainly not. I was imagining somebody reading that over a loudspeaker.
Oh, nice. No, whatever, Greg. You want him to play center field. I'm making an article tomorrow. Greg Stanwood wants Tulowitzki in center field.
I'd prefer Melvin Mora in center field.
It's too late, man. He wants to go to the East Coast.
Poor Melvin Mora.
He of 50% retirement.
Oh, gosh.
50% retirement.
What's funny is that when he came to the United States, everyone is like, wait, you just retired. You can't come back. You just said you retired from baseball. What's the deal? There were tears. And a press, you know, conference, and you were upset and retiring from Venezuelan baseball. I mean, maybe he's just moving to the States and staying here permanently now, and that's what a lot of the tears were about. But it's like, really? You tears there, and then you come play for us? I don't know. Whatever.
He's still responsible for one of the funniest situations I've ever seen at Coors Field. Matt and I were at a game where there were, like, 20 people, maybe 30 people, all dressed in Baltimore Orioles Melvin Mora gear, and we never figured out exactly who they were, but he had a fan club there that day.
Nice. Awesome. Well, it's like when I used to go to Avalanche games and find, I still go to Avalanche games, but back when David Abisher was playing for Colorado, you'd see the David Abisher fan club, a bunch of Swiss folks wearing Avalanche or various Swiss jerseys with a big Swiss flag cheering on David Abisher. And I'm like, hey, awesome. Of course, I was also a ridiculous David Abisher fan. I even have a David Abisher, Todd McFarlane figurine, as well as a Todd Helton and Sammy Sosa one.
Nice. It's incredible.
Well, since the Guthrie trade is somewhat new, only about a week old right now, I guess we can focus in a little bit more on this because we did trade two of the more notable players who were expected to make our team in Jason Hamill and Matt Lindstrom. What are your thoughts on this move?
I like it. I'm a fan of it, you know. at first I kind of thought it was an overpay. You know, Hamill for Guthrie seems pretty equal to me. Throwing in Lindstrom in there, though, kind of, you know, made me question the move at first. But we got a reliable innings eater guy that Dan O'Dowd said he wanted to get. And if you think about it, Lindstrom was good, but he's not impossible to replace. We have, you know, about 20, 30 people trying to get in the rotation. So we should have enough people to kind of be able to make the jump into the bullpen to replace those innings. So, you know, I think it's a step forward.
No, the same. I don't see it as much of an overpay for us. When you look at Hamill versus Guthrie, there's a lot of similarities. But Guthrie has got the better upside. Yeah, the advanced numbers don't necessarily, like, jump all over the two of them and just be like, oh, yes, Guthrie is the phenomenal favorite. Their rate stats look kind of the same, but the difference is that Guthrie is able to usually crank out about 20 to 30 more innings than Hamill every season. I mean, on a scale that's only relative to the three players involved in this trade, like, if Guthrie's a 10, Hamill's probably an 8, and Lindstrom's probably, like, a 3 when you account for relative values of their position. So, Hamill for Guthrie would be an obvious win for the Rockies. Throwing Lindstrom in there makes it an 11 to 10, so it's like, yeah, the Rockies lost the trade, but our organization benefits from it. And it's not to crap on Hamill. It's just that Guthrie seems to have strength in the areas that Hamill has weakness. And even though there are those intangible concepts like consistency and repeating your delivery and things like that, and not forgetting what pitch you were about to throw, Guthrie just kind of, he goes along perfectly with a high character, high leadership veteran thing that's been going on. And it's not to say that Hamill has been a bad leader or a bad team player or a bad character. They just maybe not as strong of a leader and as strong of a head of a pitching staff as they'd want to see.
Well, and he's got about three fewer years in major league experience anyway. I think that sort of at this point, switching out, I mean, basically, Guthrie's replacing the rotation spot we thought Hamill was going to go to. If you just compare that one spot, we still have so many other question marks in the rotation. Under the assumption that what we really needed was somebody to pitch those extra 30-ish innings a season or so, this move, I think, accomplishes that at the very least.
Definitely. It definitely does.
I think the biggest casualty in the trade, though, is losing Jason Hamill's post-game interviews.
But we gained a lot with... Guthrie seems to be all over the internet and is pretty funny, so...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he at the very least, he does have a good personality. I've been very open about it on the comment sections and so forth. Jason Hamill's personality is just something you don't see very often in athletes, and it's not just the humorous aspect either. He's got this very unique, specific way of thinking about the game that I always found interesting. And I mean, the way he broke down exactly what happened that time he forgot what pitch he was going to throw was just really, as silly and embarrassing as that must have been, he had a really good explanation about what happened. So, you know, basically, the point I'm trying to make is I don't feel too bad about losing both Hamill and Lindstrom to acquire Guthrie either. So even if it was technically an overpay, I'm in agreement that we're basically, to me, it's close enough to even to call it perfectly fine.
See, looking at it in terms of just the bullpen, I'm really not a fan of the deal because I do think Lindstrom was a very strong, a very important bridging piece in that bullpen from the from like the closer candidates to the not closer candidates. It seems like in the Rockies bullpen right now, if you're not a closing candidate, you're like a failed starter who is just trying to make it as a pitcher. And, you know, Belisle would fall into that category, kind of. I mean, he has a clause in his new contract about finishing games, so he's being at least thought of as a potential closer, or at least might be given the opportunity to. But so right now it's Betancourt, Brothers, and Belisle as the three big boys at the end of there, which is kind of cool that we can go back to continue calling the
ton of alliteration.
Oh, yeah, Betancourt, Belisle, and Brothers.
As the
Betancourt
boys.
And Belisle brothers. And people will say, what, there's four of them? No, they're the Betancourt and Belisle brothers. No, so there's two, is Betancourt brothers and Belisle brothers? No, it's Betancourt, Belisle, and Brothers. Who are the brothers? No, it's an old joke. And then everyone at Purple Row groans simultaneously, and a guy in a striped red and white shirt tap dances off stage with a hook pulling him off.
That's your 2012 Rockies, everyone. There it is. But I mean, it is going to be interesting to see, though, because I think you're right. There is kind of a hole in the bullpen where Lindstrom, he wasn't, you know, he didn't put up like, you know, these incredible numbers, but he was reliable. He was solid. He was, you know, there as a bridge guide if, you know, more powerful arms were tired. But, you know, I mean, same time, I guess it's just going to be interesting to see who's going to step up and kind of take that role. And I think hopefully we do have someone take that role. And I think we definitely have a lot of candidates to do it. So I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah. I mean, I've said on this podcast before in previous years, sometimes a bit foolishly, that I never trust the bullpen. They always worry me more than they should. Going all the way back to when we started in 2009, I must have spent like the first five shows that we ever did complaining about the bullpen. And I mean, it's funny going into this season how I'm actually probably more confident about our bullpen than any other spot on the whole team. It's just sort of a different experience for me, even without Lindstrom there. I mean, there's certainly possibility for stuff to go wrong, but at the same time, I like the look of it just fine.
like I said, I feel like there's a giant, I have this problem in one of my my OOTP games. I'm doing a solo game around the Rockies, and yes, my team is made of incredible players, and I've, you know, I mean, it's just a stupid team. It's always fun putting together the stupid teams. Like, I have Longo at third base, for example, and Tulo, and Eric Hosmer, and Daniel Fields. It's a ridiculous team.
I like it.
Will Rosario inexplicably stuck a catcher. When you go to my bullpen, it's like 2013 or 14 now, I can't remember, and Betancourt's still pitching. My closer is inexplicably Pedro Strop, who some of you might remember got we lost in the Rule 5 draft, or was it waivers?
It was waivers. He was protected along with Esmil Rogers in 2008, and then he was claimed at some point at the end of the season, I believe.
So Strop's my closer, and he's just a beast of a closer. Betancourt and a guy named Tony Evans are setting up. And then I have Jeremy Affeldt and Rex Brothers in my bullpen, but in the game they kind of suck. So that's sort of kind of a problem. But the funny thing is, though, is that when you do a drop-off, it's like just by ERAs alone, it's like super small ERA, like low threes ERA, low threes ERA, then like fives and sixes everywhere. And
yeah.
I don't think the Rockies bullpen is going to be that bad this year, but once you get outside of Betancourt, Belial, and Brothers, it's kind of, okay, so who's left now? We got Josh Renicky. Oh, that strikes confidence into your heart.
I'm glad you at least remembered to bring him up, though. And first, it's nice because it's become sort of an inside joke for me, at least, that everybody on our website has forgotten about the existence of Josh Renicky. Everyone's like, Escalona and Rogers, and it's like, Renicky. And then they're like, oh, I forgot he ever threw a pitch for the Rockies.
He was an interesting claim, and we picked him off on waivers too, if I recall correctly.
We did.
Yes. With him as a waiver claim, he's a decent makeup pitcher coming into the organization off of a waiver claim, which speaks to San Francisco's rotation depth, but it also, you know, could kind of potentially speak to one of our weaknesses, or at least our shrewdness in getting a grab bag player like him who's actually pretty decent. So I'm hoping he sticks. I'm not gonna you know, put money on him sticking or anything like that. He's not that impressive of a pitcher, but he's obviously got something that a lot of the other talent doesn't, because he seems to have at least somewhat of an inside track to a job for next season. He must have impressed during his short stint last season. But what surprised me about Renicky before I let you jump in, Greg,
mm-hmm.
When he was at FanFest, he just had a daughter. It seems like every pitcher on the dang staff had a daughter. And not just a kid, a daughter. Like, everybody was talking about having kids, and it got kind of weird because we're like, we're listening for baseball stuff, and they're all like, oh, yeah, being a father changes your everything. But Renicky basically said he's never played winter ball, and he doesn't have that strenuous of an off-season regimen. And I'm thinking, well, we must be hurting for relief pitchers or something if this guy's out of shot, and he just openly said, oh, yeah, I don't work out during the off-season. I know that's not what he said, but given the way things have been overreacted to this off-season, he might as well have said that.
Mm. Yeah, the team definitely sees something in him because he was one of the players that I think that at least I thought, even after he performed well in the limited time he saw at the end of the season, who I expected to be part of the roster crunch where they got rid of Matt Daly and Greg Reynolds and all these guys. I didn't expect him to make the cut, but he did. And he's survived on the roster all the way up until this point as they've done wave after wave of cuts and non-tenders and so forth. And, I mean, it's not like we've exactly been hurting for roster space, but I feel like they probably would have cleared him off if they didn't see at least an open chance, because he's also one of the players who's going to be out of free minor league options. And those are also the kinds of players like Greg Reynolds who are going to get dropped off the roster first if they don't really see a path to the team. And now that there's three spots open in the bullpen, I actually do think it's a pretty good bet that Renicky makes like the sixth or seventh bullpen spots for sort of middle relief type. And you could certainly do worse.
And you bring that up that he is a middle relief type. That's going to be kind of important coming into this season, because outside of now the four of them, and maybe Edgar Escalona or whoever, the back end of the bullpen is going to be filled out with failed rotation candidates. And I'm never comfortable with that, because with Belial, it was different because he was making the jump to relief pitching. Like, this wasn't a, oh, well, I'm going to pitch here until you have a rotation slot for me. This was a, okay, Cincinnati has not worked out well because I'm apparently not a good starting pitcher. So let's see what happens in the bullpen. Oh, it turns out I'm awesome. So, not that he was making a blatant transition where he wasn't going to be bounced back and forth like Rodgers, whereas guys like Chatwood, like Outman, like Moscoso, they have a higher chance of getting bounced around, and I just that has not worked out well for this organization so far.
That's true.
And it certainly also depends on what kind of transition that is. You know, for someone like Chatwood, I would assume that they would not see taking him along in the bullpen role as a permanent thing. It would be adjust him to a different perspective on a major league team and keep him fresh. But I still maintain that a player like that would be much better served pitching for the Drillers for the year. Whereas someone like Moscoso or even Outman, it might be more of a permanent switch that they make, that they intend to actually leave them in a relief role rather than just sort of stash them in there. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with Rodgers because, at this point, he's going to be like ninth or tenth at best on the depth chart for starting. And I think if the team decides to finally see what he can do in relief, I'll be interested to see where that goes and if he ends up being sort of a spot starter type or if they fully commit to actually trying him as a more straight type regular reliever or long reliever.
Well, my thought on Rodgers, and this isn't substantiated by any articles or commentary from people who have player access, so nobody yell at me about evidence or anything like this, please. I'm looking at you, Paul.
Okay.
In all seriousness, Rodgers seems – and my thought process is that because he's out of options, because he – from what he told us at FanFest, that he recognizes his problems with consistency and delivery and hiding the ball better, he's addressed them and at least talked about them saying, I know that these are my problems. He's not in denial of the fact that he has these issues. I think the organization is going to give him the fast track to the rotation because they have options with other guys. And with someone like White too, especially Alex White, there's talk that he might be more of a closer type than a rotation type, but he's got the longevity to be a starter, so we might as well give that the shot because there's obviously more value there. But White could be one of those guys that, like you said, Greg, we stash in the bullpen until our rotation slot opens up. Because, well, there's a lot of good reasons for it. For Rodgers, I feel like they want to give him just one last chance to claim the job. And if he doesn't do it, it's like, all right, dude, bullpen for you and you're staying here this time because we have a million other guys who can play swing man. And if you don't make it in the bullpen, good luck in Baltimore or wherever.
I was reading we'll actually move on to this topic in a second here about this Chassin drama, but I was reading the post and you randomly mentioned about the Blue Jays the same way. It's like, why are you picking these teams?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I made the comment in the Chassin article, someone said, I forgot exactly what I said, but I wouldn't be surprised by March if we saw Chassin in Toronto Blue. And then I'm like, oh, wait, we just published an article on Chassin with insider information. We'd probably better not just make up a team and then put it out there, because now that we actually have news, someone might be like, oh, my gosh, Chassin's being traded to Toronto. No, not Toronto.
You just traded our best pitcher to Toronto. That's what we need. That's what you just did.
What if we get someone great back from him? What if we get Brett Cecil back to fill out a rotation? Paul, and what?
Noah Snydergaard and all of them.
Watch us get like Edwin Encarnacion or something.
Oh God, 8-5. Oh no, this is hypothetically the worst idea ever.
There you go. So we should trade him to Baltimore instead. he's a player to be named later that was never announced for Jeremy Guthrie trade.
Okay, so we trade Esmiel Rodgers and Marco Scudero to Baltimore in exchange for inexplicably healthy Brian Roberts. Yes.
Can we get Hamill back?
Yeah, can we Hamill back in the deal? So we have Guthrie and Hamill. I'm in.
I was actually reading an article about something on MLB trade rumors. This didn't actually happen, but somebody was talking about a situation where there's actually a chance that one of the players to be named later in a trade is the player who was traded.
I remember hearing that.
so that if something like they don't want any of the other players, they're actually going to be able to redeem the player they traded back in the same trade.
Let's see.
That's awesome.
Dickie Knowles from the Phillies, Cubs, Rangers, Indians, Tigers, and Orioles was traded for himself. He earned a dubious distinction in Major League Baseball history along with Harry Chidi and Brad Golden, among others, of having been traded for himself. Knowles was traded from the Cubs to the Detroit Tigers for a player to be named later. Several months later, the teams were unable to agree on what player Chicago would receive, and so Knowles was shipped back to the Cubs, completing a deal in which he was traded for himself.
So what you're saying, like, what you're saying is we should trade Chacin to ourselves.
Yeah, dude, honestly, like when you consider the time value of money and like, yeah, I mean, hello, we're only gaining here. Or wait, maybe we're losing.
We just need to flood transaction pages with just, you know, trading players to ourselves again and again.
Yeah, and then I go crazy on Rocky's roster. Like, I just, oh, God. Just
weeping. Did somebody just start a dump truck?
That is New York City, people.
I was actually about to say, did a tornado touch down, but it does sound more like a dump truck.
Yeah, did something noisy happen?
I don't know where that's coming from, but it's definitely outside of my window.
It's in the room next to you. Let's talk about the Chacin stuff here really quickly. I guess just to set the stage, in an interview, Dan O'Dowd had mentioned that, the team had trouble getting in touch with Chacin over the off season, and they were concerned about his workout regimen because they thought that they were going to have more say in it, and they were going to bring him to states to do some drills and so forth. And then he never showed up, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. We learned today that, we got Chacin's response, I guess, to this situation. So I guess, Andrew, if you want to go into details on that.
Well, what it sounds like is that Dan O'Dowd has been doing some, making commentary on things from what it sounds like he doesn't have complete information on. They had Chacin's weight pegged, let's see. He said last year Chacin apparently was weighed 218 pounds, according to Yolis Chacin. And the pitcher says, no, I came at 228 last year, and now I'm at 226. So that's actually lower weight, yet you're freaking out about me coming into camp out of shape and overweight. And that's, got to be a frustrating moment, especially the fact that Chacin... Well, he apparently wasn't available to be reached for comment, whatever happened, because Dan O'Dowd told the Denver Post, hey, this guy's out of shape and it's freaking me out. And he's like, I'm not out of shape. Why are you calling me that?
Well, and it's also funny that it was quite easy, apparently, for for him to be reached not by the team. Like, why can the media find him but Dan O'Dowd can't, I guess is the question.
Well, the person, I'm not sure either. The person, I mean, I know that that Raphael has contact with Chacin regularly, He has his own means of getting to him, which is, you know, not surprising, not a big deal, but I'd be awfully surprised if the team didn't have very similar phone numbers for him.
You would think that
oh, it's 4-6, not 4-8. Oh, I'm an idiot.
They lost their like, phone tree, and, couldn't figure out who to call to get Chacin's number back.
You see, the number that Chacin has ends in 228, and Dan O'Dowd had a number that ended in 218, so he's upset about Chacin changing his number.
Ah, I get it.
Mm. Yay!
Mm. We figured it out. You know, my biggest concern about all this, though, is that if Chacin gets off to, like, a slow start or something, you know, for whatever reason, this is all going to be blown up, and everyone's going to talk like they have, you know, like, oh, he was way too heavy, or he didn't practice, or blah, 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 and it's going to go back and forth when, like, now we'll never really know what happened, because it's just going to be about this.
Yeah, all the smug internet minds are effectively going to say, well, you know, we heard earlier this offseason that he was out of shape and not working out hard enough. And you know, someone's going to post that on Purple Row, too, and I'm going to be like, yeah. We ran the exclusive refutation of those claims.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. No, that's fine.
We, the same thing happened with Manny Corpus in either like 08 or 09 or something like that.
I don't know if it's the same thing though, cause he actually did show up out of shape. He just got his big contract extension and this picture could not be painted more clearly as the, I got the contract, okay, time to coast.
I don't know about that though, because people were saying that all of, I mean, I don't recall the act, I mean, it's possible that it turned out that there was no reason for there to be disagreement, but it seemed to me that people, at least at the Denver Post, were saying that that was absolutely not the case when they actually met with Corpus and they said he looked fine. That there were these reports that he was like 25 pounds overweight, and they're like, that's absolutely not the case. And I don't think we ever found out exactly what happened, but just because he was awful, that became part
the
of
the reason.
Discussion. Yeah.
Didn't work hard, didn't whatever.
I mean, it's certainly possible that he did have that mentality and maybe he wasn't working hard or something like that, but it felt to me specifically with the weight issue that there was, it was a little dubious that people had, it seemed like from my recollection that somebody had mistranslated we're worried that he's lazy to we're worried that he's out of shape. And then that got all confused, but I don't know. This feeds back into that issue that we joke about in the comment section a lot anyway. We can't really take any of this stuff seriously at this point, positive or negative, because everybody is in the best shape or the worst shape ever, and they've added the best new pitch, or the new pitch doesn't do a thing, or whatever, you know, it's just, we need to see it first.
It's true. It's true.
That's the fact, is that a lot of this does really come out, it's the proof of the pudding, and, you know, like you said, Corpus's downturn in 08 and 09 really did just speak to, hey, didn't try, clearly, this, he obviously didn't work hard enough, and then Ubaldo goes out in 2010 offseason and goes and meets the Pope and stuff like that for 2 weeks. Not like 2 months, 2 weeks.
And suddenly that's the problem. Like he took too much vacation time. He had too much fun in the off season.
And then we have this gigantic off season.
He partied with the Pope too hard.
Yeah, exactly. They use real wine, dude. Come on. In all seriousness though, I can't help but wonder now, and it's just, again, another paranoia because I'm kind of going back and forth on this because we have to read so much into subtext. Is this the Rockies' new way of, like, mudslinging players? Like, now that they have created this clubhouse culture ideal of work hard and play hard and win hard or whatever, that if they're like, okay, it's time to get rid of this guy for whatever reason, or if somebody pissed somebody else off, they just say, oh, the guy didn't put in enough work this offseason, and who's going to argue with them? Like, you know, us as writers on Purple Row can't go and like, oh, no, whatever, dude. I was with him all the time. He was always at the freaking gym. What's the matter with you? You know, none of us can really refute that. So is this the Rockies' new way, like Theo Epstein running Nomar out of town? Is this the new thing like that with the Rockies, souring people on players that they're frustrated with or that Tulo doesn't like or whatever by saying they didn't put in a hard enough offseason?
See, I think this means that all those fake Twitter accounts are actually like dummy accounts that the Rockies created for their own player to like try and that would be unfortunate for sure if this is some sort of like poisoning reputations of these players going on. I don't know at this point, or probably never know exactly how conscious O'Dowd or anybody else was about how the comments were going to come off. He might have just thought he was, you know, trying to maintain some sort of objectivity about where he thought the team was with Chacin, but clearly there's some...
It does seem weird. Like, why would you even say anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
but
what I gathered from the situation is that the way I read it, and this is, again, with very limited information, trying to read a tone from O'Dowd on a 3-minute video clip from Troy Rank, and he seems to be a guy who is just so frustrated with the way things have gone that he's making this one last-ditch attempt to make things work, but he's appealing to the, I mean, I don't mean this as an insult to anyone, but the phrase "the lowest common denominator," the people, like, the people who are everywhere. Every team is mostly full of baseball guys who value the grit, the hustle, the bat control, whatever. He's appealing to the majority of traditional baseball thought by doing these moves while still trying to keep the, in constructing his lineups, while trying to keep the stat boys happy in some of the way that he's done his pitching and talking and introducing the fact that they have proprietary statistical analysis systems which track differences in fly balls. It seems like he's trying to make everyone happy even if this fails, because if they can go out swinging rather than watching a pitch break back door and buckle their knees to end the season, if they can go out fighting every single game, then even if they only win 78 games, people aren't going to be nearly as upset with them as they would if they go out like last season, which is just, didn't care, struck out, gonna go sit down now.
Yeah.
If he can get away with that, at least keeping people in the good graces, he feels like he might keep his job a little bit longer.
All right, we're at 38 minutes now, 35 minutes rather, and so I think that about wraps everything up. We'll be back in a couple weeks, back on a regular sort of weekly rotation, I think, is
hooray.
is what we're expecting. So we'll be back once the spring training is actually going, and we'll start doing what we usually do. I take it we'll break down how everybody's doing, who is surprising, who is flaming out, and all sorts of awesome stuff. With that, we'll see you next time. Take care.